So welcome everybody to another ASSD lecture. Today is the 29th of May 2019 for everyone who's listening to the recording now. ASSD stands for Autonomous Systems and Self-Determination, which is a Weizenbaum cross-sectional format. I mean, Weizenbaum Institute, all groups are interdisciplinary anyway, but in this format we work together across groups, across disciplines. Everyone, for the people in the room, you can join and actualize your ideas if you like. We usually deal with the Weizenbaum Institute's core question of self-determination in the digital world and also necessary conditions. And our methods are regular meetings, literature reading grounds, open and closed discussions, planned and spontaneous discussions as well, internal and external talks. And also, we did some theoretical work beforehand, and now we want to listen to some of the practical voices that deal with autonomy in several ways in their daily work and research. So today, we have Professor Dr. Norbert Gronau here with the topic, How Much Autonomy is Necessary? And he's a professor at University of Potsdam. His professorship is for business informatics, processes, and systems. And his research interests include Industry 4.0, digitalization, operational knowledge and skill management, and adaptable EPR systems. He studied mechanical engineering and business administration at TU Berlin. His dissertation was about a framework on a strategic management information system for the production management. And habilitation was on sustainable frameworks for architectures of industrial information systems. You see a pattern. He's editor of the scientific journal Industry Management, co-founder of the journal Productivity Management, author of more than 90 papers, and he wrote several books on the topic. So you can see there's consistency and depth of his knowledge, which made us to invite him. And the knowledge and consistency also is a reason that he's a principal investigator at the Weizenbaum Institute. So today we want to listen to the business and engineering computer science perspective of autonomy with the topic How Much Autonomy is Necessary. Thanks for being here and we're very interested.
Rainer, thank you very much for this very kind introduction and thank you for attending my talk. What I want to present you is something from the business informatics and engineering perspective, as Rainer mentioned before, and I want to introduce our understanding of autonomy, and because we also are a kind of management people, we of course want to measure autonomy, because then we can say it's enough, it's too much, it's not enough, and this is not so easy to answer the question, how can we measure? How can we measure? And then the determination of the so-called right degree or appropriate degree of autonomy. And then I would like to introduce how we test our ideas. And with the topic further research, I would like to open the discussion what happens when humans come into the picture, because our main understanding is the systems we have in place in the factories all over the world are dumb now, or they were dumb and stupid and could only be programmed but had no own conscious, and now they are getting more intelligent. They can make their own decisions. They can, they can start to behave autonomously, and that's quite interesting now. And we will see what will happen in the discussion. First, what is autonomy? And of course, what are the advantages when we have autonomous behavior in production systems or in elements of production systems? Well, autonomy is a different concept in different sciences. This is more or less the computer science point of view of autonomy, the freedom to act independently, that might be from Wikipedia, the capacity to make an informed decision, and the capacity, the ability of a system to make a decision on its own without the involvement of other system or operator. And especially this is something we always have in a factory. There is up to now, before we had Industry 4.0 or cyber physical systems, there was only a pre-programmed controlled environment, and for every situation was a predefined, pre-programmed response of the technical system. And it's the first time that with the cyber physical systems and their sensors and their actors and their computing machinery and their connection and their architecture, they can behave on their own, and there is no more need for a predefined or pre-programmed response. Yeah, and therefore we can say that a production system is autonomous when it is also capable to make a decision about its activities without the involvement of another system, like in a planning system, like the ERP systems, or in factories we also have so-called manufacturing execution systems, which are clones of the ERP systems, with much more manufacturing data and less financial data. Or operators, the foreman or the forewoman, or the factory manager, somebody has to decide, we do this order on that line or on that machine, and now that can be done autonomously. Yeah, when is it advantageous to have autonomy? It's not always advantageous, and 100% of autonomy of all machinery is quite possible. We can do that in Potsdam. We can have full autonomy of all mechanical and cyber-physical elements, but I will tell you about that later. So why is autonomy, why can autonomy be advantageous when new technologies arrive and you don't have to pre-program the response of the system to these new technologies, because the system faster adaptation, that's one of the main reasons we pursue this path to autonomy. Yeah, challenging customer requirements, these are always the worst, the customer requirements. I was once in a project where a big German manufacturing company, which made gearboxes for vans and trucks and buses, so huge gearboxes with 10 to 12 gears and some brake enhanced brakes enhancer, and so huge boxes. And the main customer of this company wanted to have a new order in which these gearboxes are stored on the truck or on the railway car. So they want to get to fetch the gearboxes in the order they needed in the day and during the day. So they don't want to rearrange these big gearboxes during the day. They want to look at exactly the right thing. And that's a very small requirement. I can describe that in 2 minutes, but it's that would have cost the company, the manufacturing company, 2.8 million euro to program this small change into their manufacturing system. And this is a thing we want to change. We want to be more flexible. Variable lot sizes. We see in some areas of the economy now a slight decrease in demand. So that might be that instead of ordering 1,000 pieces of one one manufacturer's good, the customer will order only 500 or only 300, and the next 500 4 weeks from now or 8 weeks from now. So this variability is something typical factories cannot cope with very good. Then we have a very high degree of individualization in the products. We have even in commodity products, if you look at not your smartphones, but younger people's smartphones, the whole individualization is going into the cover of the smartphone. You have at least thousands, 20,000 different covers, and then even more personalization there. Yeah, we have shorter ramp-up cycles, so we want to bring the new product to the market to full extent faster than before, because we only earn money when the factory is running at full speed, and again, the adaptation. So this is for factories, and we see it seems to be that autonomy is advantageous more often than not. But to be sure, we have to find out how autonomy can be measured, because from a management perspective, we want to measure it and to decide it's good, it's not good. Autonomy zero, that's easy, but every other degree of autonomy, that's not so easy. So we looked into the literature and found out, but that can be discussed, of course, there is no measurement of autonomy. I don't know how it is in the social sciences. Perhaps that would give us a very important additional information, but in technical sciences, in engineering, there is no measurement of autonomy. We can measure nearly everything, but we had to find our own measurement for autonomy. And we came up with two approaches to measure autonomy, the autonomy index and the so-called market-based approach. And you can see behind the market-based approach, that is something of we see all the factory as a market, and the cyber-physical systems are bargaining to get some orders or to get a resource, and there is an equilibrium, and then we have perhaps we can see where the equilibrium is, and then we have the bargaining. The autonomy index we measure by counting interactions, by counting interactions between different actors, and we differentiate in the factory three classes of actors. The user, these are humans. Users are humans, and then we have software like these ERP or ME systems, and then we have hardware and machines. The latter was in the past not autonomous, but in the future it will be much more autonomous, because we can implement cyber physical systems into the hardware like we have done in Potsdam, and then we have autonomous hardware. The software with multi-agent systems or something like that, we have also concepts to make software more autonomous, and the user is per se autonomous, but he had not a very big chance to be autonomous in the factory. He could not say, well, this morning I don't want to produce, or I don't want to manufacture this, but I want to manufacture something totally different. That was not possible. I'm always, when I'm visiting factories, or when I also do some consulting work in factories, I'm astonished how small the actual degree of people in the factory is. How really, really, really small. And then on top, then in some companies and some factories, there is an American style reporting system where all people line up in the morning in front of some boards, and they have to talk about their key figures. And when there is a key figure deviating from the should be value, there might be a future where we have more autonomy in the machines than in the humans guiding or supervising the machines. It's the question whether we want to have this, but I'm waiting for the discussion. You see, we just count, so this looks complicated and scientific, but in reality, we just count the number of interactions on the same level, because that we see as autonomous interaction on the same level. And when we go up a hierarchy, so we don't think we mean the software embedded into the machines. This is but we mean the planning and control software. So if we have to go to the software, then we have a non-autonomous interaction. And if the user has to say something to the software, then we have also a non-autonomous behavior. And we can calculate with some symbols of mathematics, which is quite very, very, very simple, an autonomy index. And that is, of course, from the whole amount of communication, how much is on the same level of between software, between users, and between hardware. How can we measure that in Potsdam, in our lab? We listen to the communication. We listen to the communication. Every element in Potsdam, I have some pictures later, every element tells what it is going to do in the future, or what is going to do in the second, and we can count then with whom it is talking, and so we can count these amounts of communication, and we can then calculate the degree of autonomy there. But this is only one approach, and when we have the next approach, we use a better approach, we will use a better approach. We have also some robots integrated into the control center communication, but the robots are no cyber-physical systems at the moment because they are pre-programmed, and also due to safety regulations. That's really safety, because I looked what the robot was doing, and then he was finished, and boom, I got a very slight hit on the head. And if you don't understand my presentation, perhaps it's because of that hit to the head. The next approach, only one slide, is the market-based approach, and we attempt to reach an equilibrium, and every cyber-physical system, so every element, can deliver something and can get something, and after some calculation, this is only two-dimensional, but in reality it's multi-dimensional, then we can derive an optimum, and we can see how high is this optimum on the side of autonomy. There is a lot of publication to that approach. This is especially useful when you want to calculate degrees of autonomy on the fly while the system is running. And the question remains, what is the appropriate degree of autonomy? And, well, let's say we need, and our main approach is there should be a natural degree of autonomy. That if you look at the production system, if you look at some key figures, at some characteristics, you can derive from these characteristics how much autonomy you will need in the best way. And then this is the red side. This is the demand. So we don't think 100% autonomy is useful, but we have to calculate how much should it be. I will tell you in a moment how we do this. And on the other side, you have your humans, your software, your machines, latter ones with cyber-physical systems. And from that, you can calculate what supply of autonomy you could deliver at best. Yeah, that might be low, medium, high. So this is a very, very rogue start. We will go a little bit more into detail, but that's our starting point for our approach. Well, what are characteristics of production systems? When politicians speak about production systems, they always think at BMW or Daimler or Volkswagen, but they don't see that the whole picture of production systems is very, very broad, and that you can easily have, even in the same factory, different characteristics of production systems. One in engineering well-known differentiation stems from the Aachen University. It says the product range is determines the characteristic. It's quite a big difference whether there is a specification by customer or whether that is a standard product without variations. Of course, when the customer has an influence, it seems to be naturally that the degree of autonomy is higher than when it's a standard product. You can run the factory without any influence from other parties, and it will manufacture something. Product structure, order trigger, when comes the order, the disposition, how is the disposition done, how is the material required, how are capacities secured, and so on. The demand planning process, the organization, how is it organized, is it teamwork, or people are standing around the object, is this a factory line, line assembly or line production, or is it, and how much of these parts you assemble there or you need for your final product is self-manufactured and how much is coming in from abroad or from other sites. And if you put some colors behind this, then you see that I tried to use four different colors. Where it is red, we have a high degree of autonomy because there might be a high flexibility necessary, but possibly the need for flexibility and autonomy goes good along, but that is also only an assumption. And when there is something green here in my table, then you see that there is no need for autonomy, because when you manufacture on stock and somebody only has to look into the goods finished goods warehouse to see is the product available, yes or no, there's no autonomy necessary in the production system, of course. Well, we went a step further into it and looked into actual factories. This is one example of our manufacturing of artificial knee joints. We have a prototype factory in Rathenow, where the real artificial knee joints are manufactured, and I just came up with a calculation for the degree of autonomy what that company or that manufacturing system, production system in Rathenow might use, following the table and giving two pluses when huge demand for autonomy is necessary and zero when there is no demand for autonomy is necessary and so on. And now, and here you will see the first time on the bottom of that table, 49.5% of autonomy might be the answer, but of course when you have this table here, you can't go into your factory and say, well, we want to have 49.5% autonomy, so behave in that way. You have to go another step further, and that's the autonomy heat map we developed. This is another factory layout. This is not the factory layout of the artificial knee joint factory, but we can now put to some areas in the manufacturing in the manufacturing realm, we can put some colors, and where we see the red color, there is a high demand for autonomy because there is a lot of flexibility needed, and where is a green color, there is no further demand of autonomy. Remember, this is always a situation where we compare what is given in the factory and what we want to have. So it's no absolute measure, but it's the absolute was 49.5%. So roughly the knee joint factory needs 50% autonomy. That is a rough figure. But here you can see, of course, in the office, we didn't look into the office or in the washrooms, but you can see in the final assembly we don't need any autonomy. Why not? Because it is organized in a way that also without autonomy, one product is following another one, and the supply of parts and raw materials is organized, and there's simply no need, and that's the reason why that is green. And then we have some areas where some autonomy might help, but the process determines the outcome. So in the paint shop, there's you of course you can have one white, one black, one white, one black, one white, one black product, but that you would have to clean the whole paint shop all with every change of the color, and that makes no sense. So first you put all white together, and then in lightly darker color like yellow perhaps, and then you end with black, because then you don't have to clean so much. And the same is with galvanizing, which is a chemical process for metals, and with pressing, where also the technical requirements are very high. So this is the heat map, and This is where we are with our determination of autonomy, and we of course we do some validations in real manufacturing sites. Next step is that we do this with Ludwigsfelde Mercedes Sprinter manufacturing area, and now we but before we do that, because they don't want to rearrange their factory layout only because we have this heat map, we want to test our approaches in our lab environment. And this is what I want to tell you now, how we do that. We have, of course, in every lab environment, no, in every factory, we have fixed elements, elements that cannot move and that should not be moved around or pushed around, like these presses, the paint shop, and all we call these fixed elements, and we build a cube. We build a cube. The cube has two holes, and one hole is the input, and on the other side is the output. And we put all the cyber physical gadgets into that cube, and we have a control surface, a screen for control. Touch screen, and we have two screens on both sides where we can see what kind of machine or fixed element it is. And yeah, when we have such a machine, this is for plastics injection, plastic injection machine, and this is a laser cutting machine. And we don't want to model all properties of these machines, but then we would end up with the real machines, and that's not necessary. But we only want to find out what is necessary in the process. So we model the relevant properties into our cube, and then we have the machines, or in some other cases when we look at a logistics simulation environment, this might be a factory as one cube. And then we have some work pieces or other movable elements or elements that move around. In a traditional factory, these elements are moved around by forklifters or by people. In a modern cyber-physical factory, these elements move around on their own, and that might be a work piece, that might be a box with some cyber-physical ability. And you see, it's similar to the big box, but without any holes, because this is a smaller box that fits into the big box. And also from the products, the relevant properties are modeled. This is something that will at the end be an artificial knee joint after some steps of cutting and milling and grinding and so on. And we can arrange a lot of these big cubes and small cubes in different ways, with some switches and some buffers and some warehouses, so to store something, and under www.industry40-live.de you can see a video, a 5 minutes video, how this is working. These are the big cubes with the hole in it, with the portal. This is one of our robots, and we see here, we see a small thing, and we also have a conveyor belt, which is also a cyber-physical system that moves, that actually moves, and there is a communication between the workpiece and the conveyor belt, because the workpiece can tell the conveyor belt where to move the workpiece. And we can say this is a dump workpiece, and the workpiece has to be moved by a worker or by a system. So we can adjust in our factory the degree of autonomy for each and every object. The software, the humans, and the machines, including not including the robot, but only due to limits in programming capacity, but including the conveyor belt, the work pieces, and the machines, or the big cubes. Yeah, and with this lab environment, I will look up another slide. Autonomy is much more advantageous when a new work piece arrives at the station, nobody is present, no worker is present, and the that in an autonomous environment, the workpiece can say to the machine, well, I'm here, if you are ready to work on me, you can work on me. And that gives us an increase in time. So the whole production process goes faster on. But we want to also count more the communication, and we want to implement some more lab tests for autonomy. What is the next thing we want to find out? Well, we don't only have new factories, but we have 99.99% of the factories are existing and consisting of old and very old elements like machines and logistic equipment and forklifters and so on. So what can we do in existing factories? That is the so-called brownfield approach, and because nobody wants to buy a new factory from scratch only to have more autonomy. Next is the question I want to discuss with you here: how do we mix the humans and the machines' autonomy? Because humans are much more autonomous. We saw it at the weekend during the European elections, what are approaches to investigate into that? And of course, if the machine is autonomous and the human is not bold enough to be autonomous, how can we encourage them? How can we improve the human-machine interface? So I'm well in my time limit, so Christian, dinner is safe. Thank you for your attention, and I'm hoping for a nice discussion. Thank you very much.